Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Wearing a Men's Warehouse outfit makes you confident, like you could do anything, so you dance like no one is watching, even though everyone is watching. Because of the Men's Warehouse outfit, you interview like the job is already yours because it is. Because of the Men's Warehouse outfit, you golf as if the rules don't apply to you because you're too well-dressed for rules. Because of the Men's Warehouse outfit. At Men's Warehouse, get measured, get fitted, get hot, get confident in everything from tailored suits to underwear and all the stuff in between. Love the way you look at Men's Warehouse.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Welcome along to episode 198 of the Streadicast, and tonight I am Brian Murphy and I will be steering this ship for the episode in the absence of our fearless leader Dale O'Donnell. Dale's unfortunately under the weather and we wish him a quick recovery. No doubt he'll be back next week in flying form again. This week we take a look back at the Burnley game at Old Trafford, where United stumbled to a 1-1 draw, another drab result in a run of them of late. We look ahead to Crystal Palace on Monday night, and of course we'll take a dive into the ongoings around the club off field, as well as your listener questions. All of this and more on the Streadicast. Now, before we get going, let me introduce you to my esteemed guest tonight, the man in the hot seat accompanying me on this week's journey, none other than Streaty News royalty, Mr. Jonathan Schrager. A familiar name and face to Streaty regulars over the years and obviously well known amongst the wider fan base. Jonathan, you're most welcome to tonight's episode. You're fresh from having a bit of dinner and watching some Champions League football. How did that go for you?
Yeah, no, we were just saying, weren't we, before we started recording about Sancho and how hopefully his worlder on the world's biggest stage, or one of them anyway, will hopefully increase his value. We might get half the money back for him now, so... Actually, it's cheered me up a little bit. That I'm thinking of FFP even when I watch other people's teams now.
It's a chance to get Sancho off the books, all going well. As we said, just off show there a minute ago, a lot of our loan outgoings rarely turn up on their loan and increase their value. But Sancho, hopefully, in the big scene, at the big stage, he's after putting his name back out there again, and we can get that transfer market done, get him off the books and get a half-decent feedback for him. So. Yeah, that was a productive one. Actually, I didn't even see the game. How did that finish?
1-0 to Dortmund. To be honest, I was meant to watch all of it, but I only ended up catching the second half. He did play well, to be fair, some lovely touches. I mean, in a way, great. It's like a mixed bag, isn't it? Because ultimately, I don't know what side of the fence you're on. Because I put out a tweet about him, and I still see some Reds saying, well, why don't we just get him back and ditch Antony, for example? Well, there's a couple of things you've got to factor in there. Obviously, whether Ten Hag's still going to be here next year and whether you think that his behaviour warrants in being able to return and us facilitating that. I'm of the opinion, probably like yourself, that he slighted the club, basically. The impression, certainly, that we were led to believe is that he was the one in the wrong. I certainly feel that from the outside. We don't know the nuances of it, but and therefore... You know, I'm of the opinion that if he plays well, it's better in terms of, like you say, increasing his value. But others online, the opinion seems to be getting back. But again, it's a dangerous precedent to sell, isn't it, to set when it comes to player power.
Funny thing about Sancho, and when we did discuss this on the podcast previously, if he had just kept his mouth shut that night, the right wing position would have opened up and opened its arms for him. It was there for the taking. Unfortunately, he did a bit of a silly thing and ended up getting out of the club. And again, another comparison that's regularly made is the behaviour of Harry Maguire, who was in a much worse position at the club, was getting hounded out, stripped of the captaincy, form was down the toilet, kept his mouth shut, behaved himself very well, put the head down and fought his way back into the side. But Sancho decided playing PlayStation at 4 o'clock in the morning, abusing kids, playing Call of Duty, was far more important than wearing a United shirt. So I think any Red that has a bit of pride in the club itself wouldn't be too open arms to have him back again. And I don't think if Erik ten Hag stays on, Jadon Sancho will be coming anywhere near that squad, which is, to be fair, it's a bit of a disappointment because coming in with such a good reputation and such talent, big fee, like you're expecting great things from him. But unfortunately, he's added to another long list of high-profile mistakes the club have made in the last few years. But actually, before he came in, Jonathan, did you want him?
I must be honest. I don't watch a massive amount of football in terms of like European football. So I've seen bits of him, and obviously he played for England a few times. He'd come off the bench. He looked like a young, exciting player. Now, whether I felt that warranted us pursuing him for 2 years at the expense of other players, obviously Ollie was quite insistent on him. But I was, you know, I was kind of going off the YouTube clips and the Twitter clips, and he looked like an exciting player, but I can't profess to have been a sort of Jadon Sancho savant before he came. But what I will say is there's a few confusing elements to this. First of all, like you alluded to there, and what he is doing again now back at Dortmund, he's playing on the right of a front three. Now, when he came to United, what I was told is his first meeting with Ollie, this isn't like something I was told as sort of a source, this is just what I'd heard on a podcast. His first conversation with Ollie was on the presumption that he was playing on the left of a front three. And if you remember when he first came, it was that debate about whether can we now move Rashford through the middle because he clearly doesn't like it. And that was a bit problematic. So why has he now gone back to playing on the right? It doesn't make sense. Like, first of all, why the hell are we signing someone without knowing their preferred position? That kind of sums up the club a little bit as well. But again, it sort of shows how incompetently we've been run in a way.
Marcus Rashford is one over the years that we've messed about with positional choices, left, right, centre forward. Like, the fact that we all clearly know, and he stated it publicly, he doesn't like playing down the middle. He likes being on the left wing, likes cutting in. That's where he feels most confident and how he naturally feels the game. Yeah. It's a strange one that you bring Sancho in and then you're going to move Rashford around. It's something we've been doing for years. We've been pigeonholing players. Like, the likes of Juan Mata come in, the best number 10 in the league for a couple of years for Chelsea. Instead of playing him in number 10, picking defences, locks open, stick him on the right wing, and he'd the pace that I have. So we keep slowest, making these silly...
Slowest man in the league. No pace. And we keep putting him on the wing. That makes sense.
Yeah, we keep making these mistakes over and over, but it's... It also raises another one with Sancho. It seems that he came into the squad and he formed quite a good friendship with a few players. And there's a kind of an underlying suggestion that maybe the Sancho issue for us as fans wasn't that big an issue. Fine, he did something wrong and we fucked him off to Dortmund. But for the squad itself, it looked like it might have caused a lot of unrest. And a lot of people point towards Marcus Rashford as his attitude changing when his buddy Sancho got thrown out of the club, which we don't know if it's true or not, but it could make an awful lot of sense in his attitude.
It could, but again, it's like, if you're a professional footballer, you're earning a stupid amount of money. Of course, you might disagree with it, even though really, as again, I say on the surface, it seems that we would probably back Ten Hag in his position on this one. If you're a footballer, you can't just throw your toys out the pram and basically give up on a whole season because your pal's not been... You know, because he's behaved a certain way and you feel he's been hard done by. Therefore, I'm going to just chuck my toys out the pram. It's madness. Like, as we all know, it wouldn't have happened under Fergie. You know, if let's say when he got rid of Ince, for example, if he thought he was becoming a big time Charlie and Keno said, oh, I loved Ince. He was my pal. I used to go drinking with him. He was my midfield partner. I can't be arsed playing with Nicky Butt. I don't want to play with Nicky Butt. What the fuck? He wouldn't have lasted a year. He wouldn't have lasted 6 months if that was his attitude. He just cracked on. You can't start throwing your toys out of the pram because your pal's gone. But just, I suppose it's modern football and we struggle to reconcile with it.
And that's exactly it. It shows, I suppose, the change in attitude and players in general in football. such a different impetus on performance and personal pride and personal performance back then. Listening to Roy Keane talk about how he wanted to win every game, and his drive and his motivation was to be the best player he could every single match he could play. These days, you look at a lot of footballers, like especially lads of our era and ilk, you're looking at footballers and you're wondering, are they literally paying for the money or do they actually give a shit? And especially incoming big money transfers, are they just coming in for the big wage, cashing in, or are they actually coming to fight for the club? So the attitude of a lot of players coming in can be questioned, but does it go back to the fact that United have just fell off a little bit over the last few years and fellas kind of see us as a gravy train more so than coming in and winning trophies and getting to the big time? Hopefully something that will change over the next few years. Look, we better get into the football side of things and have a quick look back at Burnley. Now, Burnley, not exactly a place that I thoroughly enjoy visiting, although Burnley away is a bit of fun every time I go there, but very strange crowd. Burnley landed at Old Trafford. Sorry.
When you've been there, have you been to the cricket club next door where everyone drinks before on?
Yeah, great place.
It is the Burnley Cricket Club. I remember a few lads having a bit of a kick about on the lawn there. That was great fun. That was a good laugh.
No. It's a good away day, Burnley. Not a massive journey to travel to for once.
And a proper stadium as well, like an old school, you know, none of this aspirations to become the Wembley of the North bollocks. You know, proper wooden seats and all that shite. I love it.
Yeah, totally accepting of what they are and just getting on with it. In fairness, though, they've changed. Burnley used to be one of those horrible teams playing long ball football and a horrible team to watch. They've really turned that around in the last two or three seasons. They've actually become a half-decent footballing side and playing relatively attractive football. So they're a different animal to what they were. But again, it's a game where you look at it on paper and you see Burnley coming to Old Trafford. There was a time when that was just a matter of form, 3 points, move on. Not to be. What did you make of the Burnley performance? Or even though, Johnny, we get battered recently in the last few games for these shots conceded stats, which does my tits in because I don't buy into stats that much. But as stats go, we had 27 shots on goal. A bit of a different performance to what we've seen over the last couple of months, especially the last two games. A bit of a different approach to the game. And although it didn't end in the result we wanted, what did you make of the overall game? And did anyone stand out to you in general?
Well, that's what happens when you're one of the most dynamic and exciting teams in the league, to quote our fellow bald manager. I don't know. I do love Eric, but he is making some bizarre comments at the moment. But yeah, I must be honest, in the spirit of full disclosure, I had my lad on Saturday, so I look after him some weekends. And so I let my pal, who is a Burnley fan, and obviously they've got more riding on the games at the moment, with trying to avoid the relegation. So I let him go in my seat. He's a good pal of mine. So I didn't see the game, but obviously, you know, saw highlights, watched a bit online as it was going on. And the impression I was getting, and I don't know if this is just downcast United fans generally, was that we were lucky really to get a result. That's what some of my pals were saying. But again, it could just be this general negative cloud around the club at the moment. So you'll probably be better placed to actually inform me. Is that United being pessimistic currently, or were we actually good? Because the stats suggest we played all right.
Do you know, it was funny. I think I tweeted during that game that it was one of those carbon copies of the rest of the season where we start off the game all right. We play quite well. We've got a good stronghold on the game. We're just not scoring. We're creating chances. Can't put it in the back of the net. And you're watching the game going, we've done really well. When do we fuck up? But for a change, we didn't. We did all right. Yeah. Anthony finally got a goal. I think his first Old Trafford goal possibly in the league this season. He did about 17 different types of celebrations, which was a bit outrageous. And then we did.
Did he bring the tiger one back? You remember that?
No, he actually. Yeah. No, he pulled a Sonic the Hedgehog teddy off one of the stewards who must have been minding all season and did that one, did the ball up the jersey, did a bit of a push in the air. Very dramatic, very, very dramatic. But we turned around and we absolutely shit the bed after it, as we have been doing all season. And Burnley will feel absolutely aggrieved that, I think due to a VAR decision, they didn't manage to get 3 points. And you just watch the game and you come out and listen to Ten Hag afterwards. And I love Eric Ten Hag, don't get me wrong. I do love the fella. And as you said, he's come out with some outrageous comments. I said last week or the week before, maybe he's playing the game and he's taking the piss out of the media a little bit because they obviously fucking hate him. But you can't come out and say dynamic, the most dynamic and exciting team. When I've left most away grounds this season going, that was the worst shit I've ever seen since Louis van Gaal. That was fucking horrific. But seemingly, according to Eric, we're dynamic and exciting.
I'd love to, yeah. I mean, like you say, there is this whole game, isn't there, with managers and the media, and especially when it's going badly, about what they actually say and what they actually think and the discrepancy between those two things. But I'd love to know what he says to his, you know, Mitchell van der Gag behind the scenes. I'd love to know his actual, because I've got a feeling he's not, he can't be stupid. He must know behind the scenes. He must be being candid with him about the shit that we've had to watch this year. He must be. I don't accept for a minute that he's seeing something completely different to us now.
Yeah, he's probably completely honest with him. But what, can you imagine the reaction of the general fan base if he did actually come out after the game or after any of the games and just went, right, hands up, we were absolutely fucking shit, unacceptably terrible, don't know what to do here because they're all a bunch of cunts, and said what we're thinking. How's that going to go down? Or does he just try to protect the team and play the game with the media? I'd love to hear him do it. I'd love to see it sometime. Managers just come out and go, they're an absolute bunch of bastards, we were absolutely shit, I apologise.
Yeah, but we've seen, unfortunately, with the sort of fragile egos we've got at our club, certainly nowadays, it's a recipe for them all down in tools. And I suppose that's one thing that's kept in his favour. Like, even as bad as we've been, and you might say there's a few poor performances where maybe the desire levels have dropped below what you'd expect, but I don't think they've necessarily down tools on him. I just think we've been really bad.
Yeah, we've been absolutely shocking. A lot of games, like you say, it's not really down in tools. You're just watching going, these lads are fucking terrible. They're not playing together. It looks like they don't know each other. There's no cohesion. But again, I suppose it goes back to the fact that when have we had our starting 11, our strongest 11 in inverted commas, available all season? We've got such a makeshift side all the time. It's very hard to get that cohesion and that gel. A back four that's constantly makeshift. You don't get to get that relationship with your partner beside your winger or the striker. You can get used to his runs and stuff. Very hard to get a team playing any kind of a stable football when it changes every single week, week in, week out, to completely different players and styles. So that kind of gives Eric, I suppose, a little let off, I guess.
It does. The only worry I have is sometimes, and you might know more than me, sometimes I watch it and I like to think I know the game a little bit. And I don't see many, like, I know we have this 4-3-3, if you're going to break it down into probably its simplest form. I know usually I've like one, usually I'll play one in front of the back four with the two in front of them and whatever formation you call it. But I don't see much, like, with Louis van Gaal, as brain dead football as it was, and there were times that year where I just thought, I can't watch another season. I actually was considering giving him a season ticket up. I actually think the reason we ended up sacking him after the cup final, which was obviously not very tasteful, but I think the reason we did is because loads of people, I don't think, were renewing their tickets for the season after. I think it was that dire, the football. But you still saw there was something discernible that you could put your finger on and say, oh, that's what he's trying to do. It's terrible, but I can see what he's trying to do. This year, the worrying thing is I just can't see what we're trying to do, apart from a few little quirks, like obviously the fullbacks becoming inverted sometimes and little things like that. But that's hardly pioneering nowadays. I just don't see what we're trying to do.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy. So go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
The last thing you want to hear when you need your auto insurance most is,
thank you for calling. Please listen to your list of 46 possible service options.
Which is why when you choose USAA Auto Insurance, you'll get great service that is easy and reliable. 24/7 online service for claims, access to roadside assistance, and more. All at the touch of a button. Start getting the service you deserve. Get a quote today. USAA. Ability to receive a quote depends on membership eligibility. Membership eligibility and product restrictions apply and are subject to change. USAA means United Services Automobile Association and its affiliates, San Antonio, Texas.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
you know, when Louis van Gaal was there, it's funny, he's probably the only manager that I can openly hold my hands up and say, I just wanted him gone. He broke me down so bad to a stage where I could not watch another 90 minutes of fucking horrific, 100 crosses, pass it sideways, 100 crosses. It was dire. You're on about the style of football this season. Ten Hag came into the season and seemingly clearly wanted to play this new, I guess, dynamic style with inverted fullbacks, and this was the way we're going to work. Very quickly, I suppose, and plus Onana coming in, we were playing out from the back. 45 minutes against Arsenal, one of the first games of the season, was the only time this season I've clearly seen this is what Ten Hag wants to do. And it was fucking amazing. Bar Garnacho getting done for offside. It was absolutely, it was really good to watch. It was effective, playing against a really good side, a side that could potentially win the title. But I suppose when the injury crisis happened, I don't know, did he get a kind of a shock to the system in the fact that he couldn't use the players he wanted to play his style? Did he didn't look at the players and think, these lads aren't able for it? Did he go into recovery mode? And what he probably should have done, in realistic terms, he probably should have thought, right, this is the kind of team I have. I can't play this specific style that I want to. And instead of sticking with it, just come up with a more basic, kind of a more normal, we call it, style of football, and stick with that and just kind of pigeonhole lads in here and there. But it's a worrying one. I've said it myself during the season, trying to find any semblance of a style of football, a clear pattern of play week to week has been missing. It's a black mark against them. And it has been hard to watch because some of the times you're watching games and going, have they actually got a plan, or is it just fucking go out and have a go and see what's happening? But I really would like to see him next season, if we get back to a full squad, a few changes in personnel, and see can he actually try and implement this style of football, pending we don't have an absolute fucking meltdown of injuries again. These injuries, what do you think is actually causing these injuries? Because it's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, there was a report, wasn't there, like a fortnight ago, that was it something that he'd been working, or maybe it was a leak from one of the players, I can't remember, but it was like he'd been working them too hard in between games or something. But what I don't understand is, I mean, again, a whole other discourse about the use of PEDs and performance enhancers in football, and whether we want to chuck allegations around that could bankrupt us both, but... you know, about other clubs and stuff, because it always seems to me when I watch other clubs that they're fitter than us, and it's been like that for about 10 years. So I don't get the correlation between him working them like dogs. Surely that should mean they're fitter, but maybe that the converse effect is it's meaning they're breaking down. But I'm in a bit of two minds about injuries, because I agree with you. It's definitely a mitigating factor. Like, we can't look at it and say, no Martinez, no Shaw, no other players we've not had for large periods of the season and say that that doesn't affect the team. Of course it does, but other teams have injuries as well and they don't seem to fall off a cliff like we do. So I don't understand. On the one hand, I think, well, City lost Rodri for 3 games and couldn't fucking win a game. So obviously one person can make a massive difference. Van Dijk, basically, Liverpool fans said, oh, no Van Dijk, we might as well throw the season away. So obviously certain players make a difference, but on the other hand, you look at teams that have another bucket list of injuries and they seem to cope better than us. So I don't understand it. I don't know where to come down on that.
The only thing I guess we can hope going forward is that they can pinpoint, is it just an absolute fucking horrifically bad coincidence this season, or is there a cause and can we kind of close it off? But maybe the fact that they're losing, like you're saying, City lost Rodri. Maybe we're losing so many key players that it's putting doubt in the mind of the players that are still playing, going, oh, well, we're fucked here because we've not got him, and him. They're kind of losing a bit of confidence. Maybe they're just a bunch of soft bastards and they haven't got the balls to go out and fight for it. Who knows?
Yeah, and it, might you say that the drop-off, I mean, City have always got the quality and depth to fall back on. We, as you know, we just don't have that depth. So if we don't have our first 11, immediately we're sweating. And we just, the players that come in clearly aren't good enough to do what he's prescribing. So it's, I don't know. I'm sure we'll get into the whole Ten Hag debate, but increasingly this year, I've been a bit worried about the fellow in terms of questioning whether he's going to be able, not even necessarily whether he's capable of doing the job, just whether it's a timing issue. Maybe he's come to the club at a time where a lot of managers wouldn't be able to turn it round. And he's just another one of those managers that in the right circumstance could be a success.
Yeah, looking at the likes of squad depth, look at our bench the last couple of games. It's been absolutely littered with academy products. Like lads, he's been sticking out there. Four, five, six academy lads on the bench, which illustrates just how much of a problem squad depth is, how bad the injury crisis is. And just like, no, it's not an insult to the academy kids, because I'm a massive believer in the academy and I love nothing more than seeing an academy lad come onto the team. But the drop off, obviously, if you're losing a Bruno Fernandes or a Casemiro or, you know, a player of that ilk, and you're replacing them with an academy lad coming in, you can't expect to have anything related to the same performance. So he's working with his hands tied behind his back. And yeah, maybe it is just bad timing, or maybe he just, I don't know, did he hit it at the wrong time and things just fucking fell apart?
But it's even the drop off. You're 100% right with the academy lads. And we're all, you know, you hear the old adage, don't you, about, oh, just play the kids. And we all know that whilst that sounds amazing, and occasionally you might come across a crop of kids like the class of 92 that are able to step up to the plate. But the reality is, if you chuck 11 kids into a team, as much as we'd love it and it'd be fun, if they get spanked 8-0 by Liverpool, you know, that could be a career ender for some of those kids confidence-wise. So it's just not practical. But it's not even the kids on the bench. It's the senior squad players that, as we know, just haven't stepped up to the plate. Your Amrabats, for example. You know, we've just not seen enough of him. And maybe I feel for the geezer, because he came in. I think he had an injury when he came in. He came in late, didn't he? Because it was a bit of a late deal. And then he was made to play left back at some, you know, for the first few games. He's never really had a chance in midfield. He might have done a decent job for us. But obviously, Maynou's come in and he's sort of stolen the limelight, which is understandable. But Maynou could have thrived with someone like, you know, like Amrabat next to him. Obviously, with Casemiro just falling off a cliff as well, his form. So it just feels like, again, another manager, and the job becomes so all-consuming, and they start making decisions. Like with Ten Hag, when it was going right, every decision he made seemed to be bob on. But now it's one of those where when the kind of the momentum starts falling against you and the snowball's rolling down the cliff, it's almost like that pressure gets to people. And I'm seeing it with him. I feel like he's not making the right decisions. But yeah, it's hard not to be despondent with some of it at the moment.
Yeah, like some of the substitutions he's making, I don't think if things were going well, they'd be questioned as hard, but there is an element of, is he second-guessing himself? Is he making the right decision? Is he? Some people say he might be trying to protect himself because he's losing his job. Some people would suggest that it's actually the opposite. He's still trying to protect players and bringing them off and managing their minutes. You touched on something there, though. If we did play 11 kids, and I love seeing that from people going, oh, fuck them all, play the kids. These are a bunch of guns.
Yeah. Sell them all.
Sell them all. Omari Forson came on in a game where the team didn't play very well.
Yeah.
So obviously difficult for him to do anything major when he's surrounded by lads who are underperforming. He got a bit of battering on social media. The most recent one, Willy Kambwala, fresh off the back of playing Liverpool, where everyone was saying, this guy is fucking this, that, and the other thing. He's the best thing since sliced pan.
Yeah,
and the week after, he has a bit of a stinker and he gets absolutely fucking ripped to shreds, which is what you're going to face with our fan base. So, like, he's going to take such a knock in confidence straight away after having such a high the week before. His own fans fucking tear him down the week after. That affects kids coming through to the side, and it affects their career in such a way that if they lose confidence that early, it's a very hard thing to get back that bit of ballsy arrogance coming into a first team as fresh from the academy. If you get that knocked off you after a game or two, very, very hard to come back in with that kind of cocky confidence again. So it's definitely a hard time to be academy kids at the moment. And to see what the likes of Kobbie Mainoo and them are doing, you can only take your hat off and say, Jesus, these are special talents to be able to handle this bullshit that they're getting thrown at them.
Yeah, he is an anomaly, isn't he, really? I mean, I hate to use that cliche generational word that loads of people bandy around nowadays, but my word, if he actually carries on, the worry I've got with bloody Kobbie Mainoo is, If we continue to, well, let's put a more positive slant on it. Now within EOS, obviously, we're opening Jim Ratcliffe, we're hoping that things turn around a bit and we get our shit together so that players like him can thrive at United. The worry is, obviously, if things didn't quite have an upturn, I'm not saying because he's a young Manchester lad, and I know we've got this romantic vision of, you know, he'll want to be at the club forever. But as we've seen with Rashford, it can go sour a little bit. So, like, you worry with Kobbie Mainoo, if things don't improve at United for a couple of years, is he going to be looking around thinking, what the fuck am I doing here? I might as well go and follow like Jude Bellingham's path.
Yeah, or if he's in a dressing room where it's vitriolic and it's a really bad atmosphere the whole time, he will eventually turn around and go, fuck this, I can't be doing this every day. I can go play with a bit of a cohesive side. It's all happy and having to laugh and like Arteta, playing music and songs and dancing around the place. And hard to blame a fella, to be fair.
No.
Johnny, look, before we get too deep in that, we better move on. And we've looked back at Burnley. Let's look ahead to Palace. Monday night in the capital. Again, a horrible day and time fixed for an away game. Never an enjoyable trek. So many of our travelling Reds will be fuming having to try and make that journey and get back home again. And it's never easy to go to a place like Selhurst Park. Our most recent form isn't brilliant. Our squad available isn't brilliant. It could be a very tough night. What are you expecting from the Reds? Are we looking at the same since we got last week at Burnley, or are things going to change? What? Give us something positive. Go on. Give us something to look forward to.
I was about to say, with the way you teed that up, Brian, you listed all the real optimistic elements of that trip. Fucking hell. Yeah, it is going to be hard to put a positive spin. But having said that, and they're in good form as well, aren't they, the fuckers? So it's not going to be easy. I was going to ask, are you going?
I was going to go, but I had to sack it off for work reasons, unfortunately, even though I really did want to go. But Monday night, fucking hell, Monday night's killing me because it's a 2 day off work. It's an overnighter. If I can get over and back the same day, I would have gone, of course. But the fact I've got to go over and stay and get a flight back the following day, and my recent history with flights hasn't been exactly fantastic. So the chances that 2 days there could turn into a week, I can't risk it.
What's happened? Have you just, shall we say, mistimed arriving at the airport?
I mistimed getting out of bed for one game. I mistimed or misplaced my passport in Istanbul. That almost cost me a very dear stay over.
I think I saw you tweeting about that. I saw that online. Yeah. Did you have to go to over there?
No, I was lucky. I rang the hotel we stayed in. They found my passport, but even though I offered them £100 to stick it in a taxi and get it dropped at the airport because I was short on time, they wouldn't do it because it was an official document. So I ended up walking out of the airport, saying to this taxi lad, local boy, saying, right, I've got to get to here. I've got to get back here for this flight. I will pay you extra if you get me here over and back in time, which sounded like a great idea. But considering I was off the back of about a 2 day alcohol session where I was fucking like a zombie hanging out my arse, he went full on Grand Theft Auto the whole way back into the center of Istanbul. Yeah. Same coming back out. Thought I was dead numerous times. To be fair, I made the flight. I went on to miss another one or two games because I didn't get up early for flights that I stupidly booked at stupid o'clock in the morning. And then I realized, what was the last game I was at? Chelsea, I think, recently. The semi-final in Wembley. I booked my flight for like 10:30 in the morning, where I'd usually fly at like 6 or 7, taking into account that I'm just getting that bit older and I'm just not able to get these red-eye flights anymore. So Selhurst Park, unfortunately, it's a stay-over trip, and I just can't do it. But I would have loved to have gone, but no, I'll have to sack that one off.
No one can question your commitment anyway. I find it astonishing the way I feel with United at the moment. I barely want to go down Bury New Road to watch them. So I always tip my cap to you when you make the lengths that you go to watch the shit we're having to watch this year.
It's been a bit of an effort, I won't lie. I love going to any game. Don't get me wrong. Any game I can make from here is a bonus for me. But there has been days where I've walked out of games, that mostly away grounds, when we've played like shit and gone, why have I got out of bed at silly o'clock in the morning, missed spending the day with my family, spent a fortune, and I'm now on a day trip where I've been drinking all morning and day. My hangover's kicking in as I hit the airport going home. This is absolutely horrific, and we've just played like dog shit. So it is what it is. Like, you do what you do.
If I honestly, I've thought this so many times. If I worked at the club and say I had a role where at MUTV or something, or even at the online or whatever, wherever you could produce content, one of my big things would be doing like video logs on fans that do ridiculous stuff to come and follow the club. Because in a way, I would also make players travel with fans to away games. You know, players that are injured or younger players or whatever, just because I think the content will be incredible, but it would also be an eye-opener for them. You know, like, and also the club would be benefiting because it would be great content. in terms, there's so many ideas I've got, but of course the club probably won't do it because probably it's cost too much or too many hurdles or logistics or some bollocks. But really, there's so much they're missing out on. But yeah, like, for example, your trips that you make or the crazy stories and stuff, these are gold. This is what they should be documenting.
Funny thing, I suppose, speaking to lads in the airport, one of the common themes this season, you're meeting lads, it's the same faces. I meet the same faces going to the same games, because obviously when you're going to multiple games a season, you get to know everybody going. But the amount of times we've turned around to each other and gone, I wonder do these fuckers on the team realise the effort that lads like us put in just to go and cheer them on, considering that they don't put in a shift. We're fucking missing out on so much, costing so much. No, I don't do it for a pat on the back by any means, but the fact that we do it and they don't put in the same shift on the field feels like a big slap in the face.
It's a massive slap in the face, and I don't think they do get it. And that's why, honestly, I do think it should be part. I know it sounds ridiculous, this, and people will probably take the piss if they're listening or say that's ridiculous, it could never happen. But I think part of, like, almost, you know, like when Evra came, he made a point of reading up on the Busby Babes and learning about the history of the club, and he did that off his own back. But I think it should almost be part and parcel of signing for the club. That you have to get to understand the fan culture to kind of, and I think even now more than ever, even though we've moved further away from it because the discrepancy between fans and players is so huge in terms of, like, financially and all that, it's more important now than ever that they reconnect by doing things like getting players to make the trip to away games with fan clubs or supporters clubs so they can actually see the passion involved in it and what they're playing for. Because I don't, like you just alluded to there, I don't think half of them have got a fucking clue, nor do they care.
So, like, they're collecting a big wage at the end of the week. A lot of the players, it stinks at the fact they're just turning up, not putting their shift in, getting their big wage and moving on, which can look a bit harsh of a viewpoint from a fan's point of view, because, look, maybe they do give a bollocks and maybe they are putting the shift in. It might not just be good enough, who knows. But if any of the first team want to call over here to Limerick, stay on the couch and get up at 4 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the morning, make the trek to the airport, more than welcome. Hop in with us and we can do the trek anytime you want.
It should be in their fucking contracts that they do it. That's what I'm telling you. If I was at the, I mean, obviously I'd never have a decision making role at the club, but I'd love to fucking get in there and shake things up. And just to get reconnect, like, these players, they almost need a reality check sometimes. And United, it seems like a club more than most other clubs, that they just, the distance has grown over the last 10 years more than ever. I would love to get a role doing that type of content. Imagine, like, having, especially like with a player who does seem to get it, like a Bruno or someone. Getting him on a coach to an away when he's never injured, is he? Well, fortunately, but getting him on an away to a thingy, he'd be brilliant. I remember seeing Marcus, you know, we've all seen players at away games, but, like, I remember seeing Marcus Rojo at, I think it was Stoke one year. He had a big red bubble jacket on. He wasn't a shy fellow, was he? And I speak a bit of Spanish because I studied it. I remember going over and introducing, you know, saying hello in Spanish and everything. And he was fucking buzzing, apparently, when we scored the winner. So it's like, you know, some players do get it.
Yeah, you do have that element of players that, I suppose, fan culture in England is very unique. And a lot of these players come over, they don't understand what way we view football and support football. But like that, Rojo got it. You've seen multiple players through the years in the Wayans, Carrick, Phil Jones, a couple more. I absolutely love to see it. I do love to see it. It's absolutely brilliant. But it would be, I suppose, in an ideal world, it would be lovely if the club opened up to taking on board fan opinions and the fan base's ideas of what should be happening. But again, you've only got to look at one of our main fan groups, like TRA, the Red Army. They've put so many things forth for atmosphere, and atmosphere has been something that's been highly speculated and talked about in Old Trafford. They've put a shitload of ideas through and suggestions to the club, and it just seems like the club knocks back these ideas constantly and tries to do its own thing, and we know best. And even though you're the dedicated group for atmosphere, no, you don't know what you're talking about. And it must be very disheartening for them dealing with the club, trying to plan forward and trying to improve things and feeling like they're beating up against a brick wall all the time. So it'd be lovely, even though we have the fans forum, and again, the fans forum takes a lot of stick, but I try to back them lads and ladies, because at the end of the day, anyone who's on the fans forum, they were before they were on the fence for him, they were just a red, going to home and away games, love the club. They decided to put their neck above the parapet and put their own time and effort into trying to make things better as best they could with the tools they have available. And again, I only spoke about this last week on the podcast. The problem I have is the tools available to them is the fans forum, which I don't think is a sufficient type of forum to achieve any change, because it gives the club too much time to get these PR spin answers and stuff. But given that's what we have, like, it'd be lovely to take, to get the club to take on account and take on board stuff like you're talking about and stuff like we talk about in the podcast and the stuff we talk about in the pubs before games, just general shit about how we'd like to see changes. But there's no real way of accessing the club and putting these ideas forth unless you go through the likes of the fans forum, and they don't swallow anything we have to say. So look, we're after going off tangent a little bit. Palace, we won't even get into it. Let's give a quick prediction. What's your score?
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 nine-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at IKEA-USA.com today.
CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF protect skin against damaging UV rays and continuously deliver three essential ceramides to help restore skin's protective barrier so it can lock in moisture. Non-greasy, fragrance-free, and won't clog pores? With CeraVe, skin feels hydrated and looks healthy all day. CeraVe facial moisturizers with SPF from the number one dermatologist recommended facial moisturizer brand.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
They are playing well at the moment. They've got some quick, dynamic players, haven't they? Which is always a worry. The couple that might be trying to put themselves in the shop window for us as well. You know, obviously Eze and Elise, who are both nice players. I'll always, even when we shit, I'll always try and have a positive, you know, perspective on the score. So I'll say we'll still get the job done, I think. But really, what are we playing for now in the league? I've been that dejected with it all. I barely looked at the league table for about 3 months. Are we actually on the verge of playing in the Europa Conference here?
Although I won't confirm or deny that I know the answer, I'm almost quietly hoping we do go to the conference just for the absolutely fantastic away games in Dagestan and Turkmenistan. It'd be brilliant. And it's the trophy we haven't won. So, I'd be all right with that.
I think I'd rather be in that than the Europa League, you're right. But the only thing with it is there are more games in it. I heard someone, I think it was the Talk of the Devils podcast, they were trying to explain the format, and it sounded like there was a fucking shit ton of games in it.
They've changed the Champions League format and the Europa League format. They've added an extra game in the Champions League. So instead of three European aways, we get four, which is, it sounds on paper amazing, but you add the expense of that into the travelling fans, that becomes a fucking chore, because you've already got three expensive ones. This season, Bayern Munich away was during Oktoberfest. It was the first European away. It was close from when they made the draw to actually going there. Very short timescale. Flights were horrific. I ended up flying to Frankfurt and getting a 4.5-hour train to Munich just so I could afford to get to that one. That was a costly one. Copenhagen was fucking mega money. Istanbul was mega money. You throw another one in there, that's a big effort. But I'm not sure in the Conference League format, but I know that the Champions League is definitely an extra game. Luckily, they haven't decided to play any of these in fucking America or Saudi Arabia or somewhere yet, which is probably coming. But I'm sure we'll have some semblance of European football this season. But yeah, it's come to the stage in the season again, which has become very familiar, where we're a couple of games left and thinking not much to play for. It's a bit of a dead rubber game. It's a bit shit, isn't it?
The old cliche of they should be, I mean, obviously pride, but we've established that maybe some of them don't really play for that now. But the old cliche of they should be playing for the cup final place, because, you know, the FA Cup final, I know it's lost a bit of its luster in recent times, but you know, it's still, I mean, that is a big deal. We're playing Bloody City again, aren't we? In the bloody, you know, in the cup final. So there should be an element of pride there that they want to play in the, they want to get in the starting 11.
The only downside at the moment is almost anyone who's fit is almost is guaranteed a starting place. So I suppose the competition isn't there to try and play and prove it, is it?
No, that's true. Got to hope there's a few players returning before then to sort of bolster and give a little bit of competition, or at least the semblance of it. But yeah, what do you reckon then with Palace? Have you been? I know they've done quite well recently. Obviously, they beat Liverpool, which was quite fun to watch. But I've not actually followed that many of the games this year.
Yeah, they seem to be playing quite well recently. I still reckon we'll nick a 2-1 win. But as you said about Palace lads putting themselves in the window, yeah, that Olise lad, there's a lot of talk behind the scenes about him being involved in a transfer to Old Trafford this summer, which is one to watch. So that's our hot take from tonight. Keep an eye on that chap, because a lot of story behind the scenes and in the background about him being in contact with the club and the club sniffing around him. So that could be an interesting one. Good player, that fella. You mentioned someone coming back from injury. One of those is Lisandro Martinez, who's almost fit again. But I don't think Ten Hag's going to risk him against Palace. Surely not. Fucking hell.
He can't be making that. I mean, what is he back training? Is he in full training again, or is he?
Yeah, back full training. He's kind of on the verge of coming back, but it's a 5-minute cameo at absolute best, if he even appears at all. And try to keep him fit for the cup final and add him into the squad.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we've got a few, you know, a couple of big games left as well. Obviously, Arsenal and Newcastle. I mean, give him another couple of weeks training and then try and get him half a game maybe against Arsenal or Newcastle and just get him fit for the cup final. That should be the ultimate priority with him. And surely he's learned his lesson, Ten Hag, because we've rushed him back a little, probably like you alluded to before, through desperation of how important he is to us, rushed him back.
Funnily enough, you were just saying give him a couple of weeks. Do you realise that the league is over in 2 weeks' time, I think I saw earlier today, which has almost knocked me dead. I think it's only 2 weeks left.
We've got, is it only three games we've got left now? Is it three? The Palace away and then out,
yep.
Newcastle at home. Oh, well, obviously, give him another, because I suppose it's a week. Is it 2 weeks?
Okay, now. Well, we've got Brighton away as well, I think the last game of the last away game, yeah.
So he's got, he's got a cup, you know, even if he doesn't play against Palace, he's got a few more games to build up a little bit of resilience. But yeah,
It'd be good to see him back in the side. Hopefully he can get back for City, because he's pivotal to any way we try to play out from the back. Right. We've got a very interesting story coming from the club this week, saying that the entire squad basically is up for sale, bar a few names as there have been exceptions to the rule. First of all, when you saw the initial report that the entire squad is for sale, what do you think of that report? And did you believe it? Is it paper talk, or is it Ineos trying to put a line in the sand saying, listen, lads, sick of it all. You're going to get fucked off if you don't behave yourself and start pulling the finger out.
I mean, I hope that's what it is. But yeah, I certainly hope that's what it is. We all know there's probably, I sort of joked about it on when you originally tweeted about doing the show tonight, about if we talk about all the players that are for sale rather than the ones that aren't, we could be here all night, couldn't we? I mean, it's literally probably a handful of, I think, say 95% of Reds would agree on that we're absolutely desperate to keep. You know, the obvious candidates, the trio of young lads that were on the hoarding that day, they're three lads you'd want to keep. Obviously, Mainu, Garnacho, Hoyland. I still think Hoyland's a really good player. I think he's got a lot about him, and in a good team, I think he'll be brilliant. Do I think it's true? I certainly think the Rashford one, I think, yeah. I think they've identified that as much of a brand as he is, you know, and a sort of, in inverted commas, ambassador for United because he's a local lad. But at the end of the day, if he's not doing it on the pitch, there's got to be a value to sell him. And it's, as they call it, pure profit, isn't it? Because he's an academy boy. So it's good for the books. So I certainly think Rashford's for sale. I like you, would, you know, I think it'd be a bad precedent to set to let Sancho come back. Obviously, if there's a new manager, some people will call for him to be returned. But I still think the precedent's bad, because if you say, you know, there's a player here that's outlasted a manager again, like we have with Jose and Pogba, it's just you keep repeating the same cycle. So I still think we could get maybe 30, 35 for him. What's your opinion on certain players? Like the obvious ones, Rashford, Antony, some people are saying should we cash in on him? I think if Ten Hag stays, he'll probably stay because it's his signing.
Suppose, like you joked earlier, but we could talk all night about who needs to go. The problem we face at the moment is we have a surplus of deadwood that we all think and know we need to get rid of. But we also have this massive problem of squad depth that we talked about earlier. So if you go shifting out everyone, hypothetically, if you shifted everyone that needs to go, you need to sign almost a new squad in the summer, which doesn't happen in football unless you're like the likes of Nottingham Forest there last season or the season before, or Chelsea buying everyone who came up. So you're in this position where you have to maintain a number of first team senior players. You need to bring in squad depth. You need to replace certain players. I don't fancy anyone's job at the club to try and figure this transfer window out, because they've got a massive, massive task ahead of them to pick out who can we afford to get rid of in the sense of squad depth and first team. Who do we need to bring in? Do we have enough players of sufficient quality not to be dependent on the academy so much? Or is the idea going forward, we're going to depend on the academy? Very murky waters in the transfer window ahead of us. But I think the likes of Rashford, like, again, the start of the season, I was up on that hill with my sword out, fighting off all the detractors, saying this guy was brilliant last season. Without him, we were fucked. Give him a chance. Eventually, after all these chances, I finally held my hands up and said, look, his body language doesn't give it to me. His attitude, his performances. Would it be better for both if he wants to go, or if he does go, it possibly could? Would it set a massive precedent in the club saying, if we can sell Marcus Rashford, every one of you should fucking watch your back because you could be the next one to go? So maybe it needs to be done. Maybe this is the change we need to see in the squad and the club to take that player power away and start grabbing a bit of power back to the club itself and the manager and saying, look, if you're not up to it, you're out the fucking gap.
100%, couldn't agree more. And like you've said as well, I think it's best for all parties. I know, I'm not one of these people that hates Marcus Rashford. Obviously, I've got a lot of fondness for him. But ultimately, like, it's probably best for everyone concerned, including the player. If the guy's not happy, and we all can speculate about, is he not happy because of footballing reasons or personal reasons? Maybe there is stuff going off the field. You know, there's been a couple of things like, suggestions of things off the field. And I just think if the guy's not happy and he needs a change of scenery or just to get away from the club and the pressure of it, then and we can get a decent fee, then everyone's happy. And I want the guy. If he went to another club, obviously if he went to City, it was never going to happen. But if he went to a rival and tore it up, obviously we'd be upset. But if he went to any other club in the world in another country, I'd want the guy to score 50 goals next year. I wouldn't look at it and say, look at that, we've made a mistake. I'd say, fucking good luck to him. He needed a change of scenery.
And it's a funny one because someone made mention of it. It was a random tweet I saw that if Marcus Rashford was to leave the club, you'd be absolutely gutted to see him tear it up somewhere else, in the sense that, not the sense that you'd be gutted against him because you don't like him. You'd be gutted thinking, I really wish he was able to continue with us and do that here. And it's kind of It's a bit of a signal that it didn't work out in that sense. But like you said, I'd absolutely, if he went off to Spain or Italy or somewhere, I'd love to see him fucking absolutely tear the place up and score 50 goals a season and reignite his career and get going. But it might be best for both parties. It looks like it's a situation where it has come to that it might just be suitable for him to go for himself, and it might be good timing for the club. As you said, pure profit. FFP comes into it. He's an academy lad. It's very important going forward.
And it might be our last chance to cash in on him, because ultimately, if he has another bad year, then the value drops again by half, doesn't it? I mean, obviously, if we sell him last year on the back of that season, we get a shed load of money. This year, people say we could get 80 for him. I think we'd be lucky, you know, maybe 60, which is still a good amount. But last year, he probably could have got 120 for him. So, you know, every bad year, the value will halve, won't it? So, I don't know. I just think for the guy's own mental health, if he's not happy here, and, you know, if he can't be happy at his boyhood club playing football on that amount of money, then try and pursue it elsewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as a fan, or as fans, should I say, that are not kind of going to look at the fella and just hate him because he's not playing well, which is, it's beneath us, but it's not the kind of attitude we have. You want to see a player do well. You want to see him enjoying his football, especially a local lad. If it's not working out, cut ties, let him go. But there's one particular player. Of all the stories that are coming out and this thing about the squad is for sale and whatnot, one story has come out, and I won't lie, stories rarely rattle me, and they very rarely get to me, and they very rarely make me sit up and pay attention. But this one, it certainly did. Bruno Fernandes is in the headlines with some comments made regarding his future. Now, these things can always be easily misconstrued, taken out of context, but it would appear, on the surface at least, he hasn't entirely dismissed the potential of leaving the club. The door hasn't been slammed shut to potential suitors. It's a small bit of a kick in the teeth for us to hear such a conversation. Surely Bruno Fernandes doesn't jump ship. Or is it a case that Bruno Fernandes is looking at the squad thinking, hang on a second, lads, I'm in the prime of my career. I'm a fucking damn good footballer. Probably the best player at the club. I'm going to get murdered for saying that, but availability puts in a shift. Even when he's playing shit, you know he's trying his best. You know well if he was at a club that's thriving, he would be achieving things. You couldn't really blame him, as much as it would kill me to say it. You couldn't blame him for thinking, I could be doing so much more somewhere else. Is it paper talk? Is it clicks? Or is it a real situation where Bruno Fernandes could potentially consider, after the Euros, if a big club comes in for him, yeah, I've done enough. I've given my best to these cunts. Fuck them. I'm off.
Well, I suppose a couple of things. How long has he got left on his contract? Do we know?
Offhand, I don't, but I'm assuming there's another two to three years-ish because they're not talking about like small fees or fucking off on a free or anything. So there must be enough to get a good fee for him.
Right, because I was going to say, as much as Bruno does, I do think he genuinely is one of the ones that isn't just paying lip service to the whole United ethos and everything. I do genuinely think he's one of the ones that gets it. And also, as a professional footballer, gets that he's in a lucky position. But I don't think that means he's above playing the game as such. So, there's a couple of things that could be going on here. Like you say, he could just be thinking he's wasting his career. And let's be honest, like we sort of suggested with Cobby earlier, as much as we love United and we don't think there's another club in the world that's better to play for, as a professional footballer, if you've got ambitions to achieve and everything, we have to be honest and say, we aren't a club that's looking like we're going to win major honours in the next few years. So maybe he's thinking to himself, I don't want to retire without having won a major league title or a Champions League. So maybe that's in his mind. Or maybe he's just looking around thinking, I'm on 250 grand a week here. Jadon Sancho's on 350 grand a week and he's shy. He's done nothing for United. Maybe he's just playing the game publicly about wanting an offer again, re-up his salary. It could just be something as simple as that. But I, like yourself, think there is a chance. He might just be flirting, dropping the little nugget for other clubs to come and have a conversation with him. You know how they play the game in the media now. It could just be that.
I'm chatting to my lads who go to games with me, my usual group. The screenshot was dropped into the group chat and the initial reaction from everyone was, he's looking for a contract. He's playing the game with United. He's putting the threat of leaving out there and he's looking for a bumper contract. Not a bumper contract, but a boost considering what he's putting in. So I'm going to err on the side of believing that Bruno doesn't want to leave, specifically because, like when you said he gets it, you look back to Solskjaer's time and remember that game where Solskjaer knew he was fucked. He knew it was game over. He said it on the overlap. I knew I was done. He came to the away end. He came to the away end and I was there and yeah. Bruno literally almost pulled Ole aside and went to the fans and goes, no, it was actually us. It's the fucking players that are wrong here, not him. Which I had great respect and admiration for him doing that. He took that position upon himself to say, look, hands up, we were shit. Don't give it to him. He doesn't deserve it. And he didn't deserve it. I'm sure you loved Ole as much as I do and listened to that overlap interview. It was tough to swallow and listen to what happened. And you know that all you talk about players are people that get it, considering he was a player and then a manager. If there's anybody on this planet who gets it, he fucking bleeds and absolutely, he just loves Manchester United, something to a next level. So it was hard to see him get treated the way he did, but that's what I'd look at in Bruno. You know?
And what encapsulated the class of the man as well is that interview he did upon exiting, where he basically broke down at the emotional thought of Carrick getting an opportunity. Do you know what I mean? It was like an act of total selflessness, which made us absolutely love him even more. I mean, anyone who has any sort of negative sentiment towards Ollie, I don't understand it, let's put it that way. You know, everyone feels how they feel, but yeah, Ollie is just, he's sort of next level legendary status at United. But again, like going back to groups of players, you know, in the end, we felt like some players, not Bruno, because again, Bruno's an honest fella who probably holds himself very accountable when it comes to his own performances. A lot of other players probably did throw him under the bus a little bit in the end, you know, just couldn't be arsed fighting for it.
Bill can't believe to this day that United made him do that interview in the context and timing of it was and put it out publicly. I thought it was such a sacrificial lamb to the slaughter, and playing off his emotions and knowing he's a really honest guy, he was going to react that way. It left a sour taste that they did that, and he probably wanted to do it and wanted to show his emotions and whatnot, but Jesus Christ, I couldn't believe that came out publicly. I watched it. I did get a little bit emotional, I won't lie. I was watching it thinking he'd have been hung out to dry, but what an awful thing to do by United. Manager going out, club legend. And let's make sure he's absolutely fucking devastated and then send him packing.
Yeah, yeah. No, I suppose all the ways we've parted ways with managers post-Fergie hasn't been particularly, it's not been particularly savoury, has it, with most of them? It's just, I suppose the way the clubs operate, we've just got to hope, haven't we? We've got to hope that next year, it is a genuine new door, not just one of these false ones that we've kind of been promised in recent years. We've just got to hope that Sir Jim Ratcliffe's the real deal. And certain moves that he's made suggest that he will be. Maybe. And I still think it's going to take years to get it right. But let's just hope we see some signs.
The one thing I really do hope, and I suppose it's not something that's spoke about too much because we're all on the gravy train of Sir Jim and Ineos being this new dawn and coming in doing the right things and the right moves and bringing in the right people. Imagine they come in and they fuck up after all this fighting and arguing to get someone new in. We're absolutely bollocks. But look, we won't go into that because this is a podcast where we don't go into ultra negatives, but it's a hard one to think about. Jumping ahead quickly, something that was topical recently for season ticket holders in particular. The 17-19 ruling, as it's called, the enforcement of the club that you have to attend 17 out of 19 games a season, or at least use the club's format for counting as attendance, forwarding a game, donating it to the foundation. It only works in particular games, but in a league, obviously, you've got certain options available. The ruling itself has been battered publicly. The fans forum had a bit of a win, and Must had a bit of a win. The club are making life more difficult for the fans, in particular the regular matchgoers. It's how I feel myself. Do you think they're aiming at the tourist industry more so going forward? The type of fans that spend a lot more money match day in comparison to the likes of you and I, who will probably have a pint and a pie at best. The likes of Sir Jim thinking moving forward, there's this impetus on building a campus. On like the ground is one thing, the regeneration of Old Trafford or the New Trafford or whatever you want to call it. There's also a lot of talk about having stuff around it to keep people there more. Is it a move now towards the new dawn of, dare I say it, that type of fan taking over? Are they trying to push out the likes of yourself and myself, what we call legacy traditional fans? Or is it just a ruling that they've been thinking about and tried to implement it and it's backfired completely, but it's left an awful sour taste in the mouth of most fans?
This episode is brought to you by Fiat. A remix just hits different. The 2024 Fiat 500e is no exception. Cruise city streets in style with an all-electric ride that's fully equipped with an available premium JBL audio system. Explore the all-new 2024 Fiat 500e at fiat.com. Fiat is a registered trademark of FCA Group Marketing SPA, used under license by FCA US LLC.
This episode is brought to you by Bai. It's Wonderwater. What makes Bai so great? It's simple. From Raspberry Lemon Lime by Sydney Sweeney to Zambia Bing Cherry and Palavo Pineapple Mango, Bai has antioxidants, electrolytes, and no artificial sweeteners. So, for flavorful hydration, choose Bai. It's Wonderwater. Learn more about Bai and discover all of the exotic, bold flavors at drinkbai.com.
Yeah, and I can't. I mean, that is one of the main theories that sort of circulated, isn't it? About they're trying to supplant us with, you know, the more tourist type fans or fans that will come and spend a lot of money on site. I just think if that is the case, firstly, I really hope it isn't the case, not only because it affects me, but like you would like to think Sir Jim Ratcliffe coming in with this rhetoric about being, you know, Manchester lad and United fan, you would hope one of his first major moves isn't to push actual fans further away from the club. And the second thing is, like, ultimately, United, as big a club as we are, you can't trade on the name forever. Like, if they push out the legacy fans and we're prideful enough to not go back after time, like, there's only... Can United fill a... I mean, we can't even fill the ground now for certain games. If we're being honest, I know we have a go at City and we have a laugh, but there's certain, say, Europa League games or League Cup games on a Tuesday night where we don't fully fill it. They've sold the tickets, but so they can declare we have. But we, you and I both know that we don't. So, like, are they going to get... And if they extend the stadium to make it 90,000 or something like that, they're not going to sell out a lot of games. Like, if they can't push us away. And if they do, then it's a very short-sighted policy, because if they don't get instant success with Ineos, every year that we go without winning major trophies and another club does, and these fair-weather fans that might come from the other side of the world just pick a team that's successful, it's a real short-sighted policy, that. So I kind of hope it's not right. But, I mean, in a way, I suppose it would make sense at the treatment. But I'm like you, I just think it's a ludicrous concept that you pay your money for a season ticket and then you are restricted on how you can use it. You know, so many people have so many circumstances. I mean, yourself, looking where you live, I mean, no one could begrudge you if you thought, I'm only going to come across 5 or 6 times a year. That's still in itself a massive effort. The fact that you do it yourself, you know, that you do it a ridiculous amount of times shows your level of dedication. But really, if you bought it and only used it 5 or 6 times, so what? It's your right to do that. I'm sure you're going to try and give it to someone to use, but why should you be dictated to and how that is?
You know, one of the things you just touched on there is the games that we can't, or historically we've struggled to sell out. So Europa League games, shitty cup games against the likes of, I don't know, Rochdale or someone. Yeah. The club very cleverly invented, as they do, they invent a lot of things out of nowhere. They invented the cup season ticket, which sounded and was packaged so nicely. Get a cup season ticket. It's now, it used to be the route to a full season ticket was you went on the waiting list. Then it was the priority, pay £100 deposit. Then it was buy premium membership, get all this really fancy merchandise, but you're also on the priority list for a season ticket. Then they change it again, get a cup season ticket, and you jump the queue again. So the queue has been fucking jumped by everybody. They gave this cup season ticket out to everybody without clearly stating your cup season ticket basically means you can go to all the shit games. When it gets good, fuck off. You're not getting anything. Backfired massively on the club, that one, but they've cured the problem that we know exists of these lesser games not selling by flogging them, and they're pre-sold in these cup season tickets. But they're very much cute in their behaviour towards real issues, and they kind of, I suppose, paper over the cracks as such. But this 17-19, I was on a Teams call with United recently. We have regular Teams calls with them. I run a supporters club here, so as chairman of an official branch, we have, obviously, we've got access to the club, but we do have these really good Microsoft Teams meetings with the club, and there's usually 2, 3, 4 representatives there. We were talking about the 17-19, we're talking about different topics, and I tried to raise something, which I honestly believe is probably the best thing they could possibly do to quell this issue among the fan base. My point to them was, you brought in a membership, which I got fucking killed by the club for saying this publicly, but anyway, you brought in this membership called forwarding membership. £20, might I add, to give your ticket to somebody. So my argument with the club was, if my wife wants to take my personal season ticket, which is my own seat in Old Trafford, and my wife, who I live with 365 days a year, minus the days I travel for United, if she wants to use it, I've got to pop £20 to United to allow her to use my seat. If my son wants to use it, £20. If your wife, son, your dad, your granddad, or any one of your best friends want to use your seat, it's an extra £20 to United. My suggestion to the club Why not, at the start of the season, before the season begins, name, as a season ticket holder, name five people, three people, however the figure is, name these people that can freely use your season ticket as your family and best friends without needing a membership. Allow them to do it. That was fine. Last week or week before, United have had this real, real stronghold on memberships. They're pushing this membership light, full, premium, forward, and everyone, we need to know exactly who's in the ground at all times. They all have to be accounted for with these real memberships, blah-de-blah. They snuck this thing out of nowhere. I don't know if you noticed it, but Burnley, I think, was the first time I saw it. They've gone towards the app, and they've gone towards dynamic QRs, and they've gone through all these other ticketing changes, which they've been testing in the background, and we found out this a couple of weeks back. Close to the game, they've ridiculously just stated on the website, you can now forward this ticket to a non-member, which I think is 3 hours before the game. So, and there was no communications on this, no comms, no information. Just randomly it came up that now, 3 hours before the game or 2 hours before the game, you can now give it to a non-member if you can't attend. I can't make head or tail of this.
You see, there is a bit of confusion here, because I was under the impression, I'm sure someone said they've got this new technology whereby whichever QR code you send them is, because it's meant to only be recognized off the one phone or the one app or whatever, you can't give it to someone else to put in their wallet or their app, because the QR code changes every 30 seconds or so. It's all got very technological, but I don't know if that's even the... Is that the case now, that you can actually forward it, or is it going to recognise it's not your phone still?
Right. To clarify the ticketing situation going forward. So United have brought in for home games that all tickets next season will be app-based. So the ticket has to be on the app. The technology they've been testing all season without it telling any of us. First of all, it became app-based, which I found out. Next thing they mentioned on one of those Teams calls, actually, that the QR codes are what we call dynamic QR. So the QR code will change. So essentially, if I wanted to give you my ticket and you're not a member, I could have screenshot the ticket 2 weeks ago, give it to you. But because these new dynamic QRs come in, the QR code changes regularly. So that screenshot's now null and void. It's gone. It's dead. So that eradicates the chances of giving it to anybody. Then they dropped on us out of nowhere this new technology where you're locked to one device. So my season ticket, the start of next season, my season ticket, your season ticket, when we accept our season ticket, hypothetically, you click a thing saying, yeah, this is the device this season ticket will be used on, which locks it to the device. The QR code now won't even appear until 3 hours before kickoff, and it will change regularly. So fair enough, this is all anti-touting measures. It's caused a fucking ruckus amongst everybody. But the one that really gets me, Johnny, is they've been so hard on giving your ticket to non-members and lads getting banned for it and whatever else. Then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, they just declare on the website, you can now give it to non-members because it's close enough to the game that no one can fucking do anything about it, and fuck it off and give it to them, and let's get somebody in instead of having nobody there. Like, no communication from the club again.
So just to clarify, so we can now forward it to non-members that don't have to pay anything, but we can do that within 2 hours of the game. Is that what we're saying? So if you arrange with, say, for example, your example there with the missus, say she flies to Manchester, you're at home looking after the kids. You can then forward the ticket to her. She doesn't have to be a member and she's going to be able to use it. You just have to forward it to her 2 hours before the game. Is that going to be the case?
That's literally what it looks like based on the info on the website and based on the very, very scant comms we've got recently. But before that 2 hour window, it's got to be membership forward, membership light, membership. But now they've seemingly opened this section up where you can randomly give it to anybody, which makes no sense and goes against everything they've been saying.
Yeah, because ultimately that's not a problem. Like if you organize with a pal or family member or whatever that they're going to have the ticket, you just know that you remind yourself, right, at 1 o'clock, I have to forward it. So really, no one's going to even bother buying a member. I mean, it kind of goes against what their initial plan was, wasn't it, to get everyone signed up to the club? I don't know. It seems confusing to me. I was under the impression you still had to bloody do it. But either way, all these type of restrictions, it just seems daft to me. And like you say, maybe it's anti-touting, but is it even going to achieve that goal? I mean, yeah, maybe it will for certain games. But for most games, we all know that 80% of the games, you can't. There's going to be no one that you're going to be able to sell your ticket to for over face value for most. It's only like handful of games where people make an absolute, you know, steal on it.
Yeah, like realistically, you're not going to be getting 200 quid for Burnley at home, but
you're lucky to give them away. Sometimes, like you know yourself, you're asking mates and you can't fucking shift tickets for free.
Absolutely.
And I've seen you do it as well, because you're like me, I wouldn't ask Reds for massive amounts of money for tickets. Like, I've tried to give loads of tickets away. You can't even give them away for free half the time.
Yeah, it's a very weird one. It snuck up on me out of nowhere, this forward into non-members. I'm sure we get a bit more clarity going forward, but there's another thing where they've tried to put into the club and get them to actually back it up in black and white, that selling your ticket for face value is no longer a bannable offence, that it's literally allowed by the club. And the club have agreed to it under the counter previous times, but they're trying to get the club to properly put it in black and white terms and conditions that it's allowed. But it's a very, very grey cloud area over ticketing at the moment, because there's so many questions, there's so many changes. Next season could be very interesting with all these locked devices and stuff, but I don't know, it's weird.
You can imagine the amount of tweets that are going to be going out on match days when people are locked out and you can't get in. I even saw when they were trialing it the other week in TRA, there was a few people saying they hadn't registered on the app that they'd actually attended. You know, so they've buzzed in and they've thought, wait, it didn't make a noise there, but obviously they're in a rush to get up the stairs, aren't they? So they've not. And then afterwards, they've looked online and it's not even registered that they've attended. So there's going to be all sorts of teething problems with it. And it might be one game which decides whether or not the club allow you to renew for the season after. So it's going to kick off, I'm sure. Is just out of interest, is I thought the fans forum, wasn't their win that they'd got it down to 15 out of 19? So at least it's a bit more palatable. It's not great, but it's better.
Basically, they've gone back to the club and fought the 17-19 ruling. They've brought it down to, it was 14, I think, this season. They've got it down to 15 for now, and it's on a yearly review and whatnot. So it's bought us a bit of time to try and figure out this whole thing out. But ticketing at the club has become very, very complicated very, very quickly. Look, we could probably talk about this and batter the club about it for a long time, but I'm conscious the time is running out for us. We're going to move on quickly, Johnny, to one of our favourite sections, and it's the end of our podcast always. It's listener questions. I'm going to throw a couple of them at you quickly before we get out of here and we head to bed, because it's 11:30 at night and I'm sure you, like myself, are ready for a bit of kip. Mark Houston on Twitter has asked, if there was to be a manager change in the summer, which I don't want, do you think Tuchel would be the best option to come in, or what sort of coach do you realistically think Sir Jim would target?
Flipping hope it's not Gareth Southgate. That's the first thing I'll say. I would actually cry, I think, like most of us would, I think, if it was Gareth Southgate. I mean, the idea of it being Gareth Southgate or Potter really saddens me. And I know Ineos have got relationships with both, and I'm sure they're both great guys and very capable managers, but they don't really inspire you with much confidence that they could take on a job of the magnitude of Manchester United. I mean, we saw how Potter dealt with the egos at Chelsea. So you can only imagine some of the prima donnas in our dressing room, how they'd react to Potter. I mean, if Southgate wins the Euros, that would probably give him a bit more gravitas in terms of commanding respect in the dressing room. But I've found the guy's football, watching England, I mean, I'm not the biggest international football fan as it is, but And even though the first tournament, you know, we got to the semi-final in the World Cup and it was a bit of fun and everything, but let's be honest, we've got such a talented group of players. And the guy just, I find the way he lines them up really defensive and negative. And you can just imagine at United, if it's going wrong, how drab it'd be. So we can remove those two as candidates. Tuchel's the obvious one, isn't it? Because he's leaving. He's leaving and he's a name that hasn't been linked with too many other big jobs this year. So he's the one that probably would excite me the most, because I do think you can tell he's got a lot of tactical nous, and he seems quite a strong character. Like, if you remember, he was in situ at Chelsea when all the stuff with Abramovich was going on, wasn't he? And the way he handled the press was quite masterful during all that, which was a really turbulent time. Could have been a very difficult time. And actually, everything that's happened subsequently at Chelsea shows actually he was doing a pretty good job before they got rid of him, and obviously won the Champions League, etc. So he'd probably be my favourite candidate if it's not Ten Hag. I'm like yourself, I'm not totally in the Ten Hag out camp. I'd be curious to see if he could do anything under Ineos with, you know, with a bit more of a favourable infrastructure around him. But I'm also increasingly this season got to the point where I might not be as upset if he left. So I'm on the fence a little bit. If we get someone, Tuchel probably would be the main man, yeah.
The only thing about Tuchel, and someone raised this point earlier, is he's seen as a really top-class manager, but clubs don't seem to stick with him for some reason, or he doesn't seem to stick around long. So there's something strange about the Tuchel managerial role, that it just doesn't seem to work out long-term. And he's had some top jobs.
Well, the thing is, you're right, but I suppose if we look at the actual clubs he's managed, I mean, obviously United's a bit of a chaotic club in itself, but I mean, managing at PSG, I mean, that club's a very sort of volatile club. And then obviously Chelsea during that transition period, which was volatile. You know, he's not had the easiest kind of stable clubs. Maybe if he finds a club that he marries a bit better with. And we all know that Bayern Munich, am I right in saying they've actually asked him to stay now, which was a bit weird considering they got absolutely battered in the league, but the fans were wanting him to stay or something.
The latest thing I saw today was Ralf Rangnick, who we know very well, is pretty much done and dusted. So I'm not sure what's going on with Bayern.
Oh, I think the fans maybe. I found it a bit bizarre. Maybe the fans were unfurling banners saying they wanted him to stay next season, but he's obviously confirmed he isn't going to. So they're getting Ralfie, which, yeah, is interesting in itself. But I don't know. I mean, Tuchel, who else is there even? I mean, there's not a great deal of choice. Would you be in favour of De Zerbi?
No chance. I don't. De Zerbi, Southgate, Potter, no chance. Tuchel, if it was a gun to my head and I had to choose one of them, probably Tuchel. But I wonder if the Bayern fans, did they watch United under Ralf Rangnick for a while, and that's why they're putting banners out, because that was fucking dire as well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, the one thing you can say, he was very honest, which we all appreciated at the time, but he was probably too honest in terms of his own job prospects. But yeah, he... do you remember that first half? I think it was against Palace at home. And we all thought he was the saviour. Like, we actually saw Ronaldo pressing for 45 minutes. It was incredible stuff. And then it all went downhill from there. But yeah, another chapter in the United manager story.
The father of the gegenpress who couldn't get us the gegenpress. John Fearn on Twitter has also asked, why, other than the accepted logic, can we not have a fire sale in the club? Bring in young, hungry, not necessarily big names or massive wages, and backfill the squad with the academy, because paying massive fees and wages has not worked to date. Fair point.
I suppose it's what we touched upon before, isn't it? It's, you know, as much as we love the academy boys, it's, you've got to drip feed them in rather than just sort of open the tap, haven't you? I, like you, there's loads of academy. There's academy lads that have left in the last few years that I think we haven't probably given a proper chance to, but we don't see them day in, day out. I mean, I look at when I see James Garner play for Everton, I see a clever footballer. You know, he's got a brain. He's played at right back for them. He's done a job. You know, he's good on the ball. And I think he can't be much worse than some of the players we've had at the club. So, but, you know, I don't know. I just think it's a very... There's obviously a reason why they're reluctant to do it. And like you say, the fire sale thing sounds great, but it's just not feasible. It doesn't appear to be anyway. I mean, there's players I'd like to keep. I'd like to keep Harry Maguire. I think he's a fine squad player. If he's happy to be, which seemingly he is, I think he's a fine squad player. And you can't just get rid of everyone. I'd rather get rid of Lindelof before him.
Yeah, I think even Scott McTominay falls into the Maguire category there, a lad. If he's happy to stay, very useful as a squad player. But the fire sale, it's a lovely pipe dream, but I don't think we're ever going to see it. We've had a few questions on Facebook, which we've probably covered. Pat Connolly, I wouldn't blame Bruno if he walked. He's been carrying the team for three seasons. Without his goals and assists, we'd be in a far worse situation, which I can't really disagree with. Phil Morrissey, will we ever see a fully fit squad or team? Phil, judging by this season, probably not. Dave Cleaver backs it up. If it's not been done to death in previous podcasts, what the hell is going on with the injuries, which we touched on earlier? Raymond Tan, will finish up with this one. It's quite a long one, but as a staunch supporter, we all hold dear the performance of the club and the bad results of the season. The critics are out in full force, baying for changes in the manager, removing players who are deemed to have a bad season. Firstly, I think the club has to conduct a post-mortem on why there are so many injuries, due to the training methods or is it the correct situation? Secondly, there must be a call for the players and management of the club to a meeting where every negative of the season should be brought up and have a plan to prevent it next season. This is taken into account, obviously, Ten Hag stays. Seems there's a big gap between the players and the manager and also the management team in general. Attending games to show support is good, but to know whatever is happening to the team is also important. Let's hope for a better showing next season. So I suppose the question out of all that is, how nice would it be for Ten Hag, if the club does back him and say he's staying, to sit down with the team, go through what went wrong, and just see what the reaction is, I guess, and what can you gauge from the players you have, and that'll give you an idea who needs to go and who needs to stay, doesn't it?
It does, and it's a great. We'd obviously love that to happen, but it seems sort of symptomatic of modern football that I don't know. Like there just doesn't like the obvious lines of communication that we think are very obvious and should exist at any business that's functioning properly. Just don't seem to exist at United. I mean, going back to the Sancho thing, what astounded me, and I'm sure astounded you and anyone logical, is there was a total breakdown in communication. Surely we just thought, get the two of them in a room. If you can get two reasonable human beings having a half-decent conversation with each other, surely they can hash it out and get to a point of compromise. But it was going through agents. It was going through Murta was involved. It was like, can't these two guys get in a room and discuss stuff without it being an argument? Like things that go on probably every day in everyday businesses, normal businesses that function properly. Like United, like why is there 50 middlemen? Just get everyone in a room. And the idea of getting the whole squad in a room without toys coming out the pram and people being offended because they're being blamed for certain things. Like that's how it should work. And I imagine under Fergie, when they hash stuff out as a squad, and there's a team that went out probably, had a few drinks together and ironed things out because they didn't like let their ego get in the way. We love all this stuff, but sadly, it doesn't seem to happen nowadays. We've just got to hope, again, tying it back in with Ineos, that that's the sort of thing that they do actually implement. And going back to the injuries, that they assess it by, they've got all their physical guys coming in now, haven't they? Their own team. So presumably, they're going to be monitoring that. And maybe because they've come in partway through the season, we've not seen the benefits of that. But you've got to hope that during the pre-season training and things like that, that they're monitoring it all the time, and therefore maybe we'll see the fruits of that during the next season.
The Sancho one is such a curious situation because, like you said, if you take it back to the Joe blogs on the street, or I often look back at do you remember the documentary where Jose was at Spurs and Danny Rose came in and he wanted to play more football, and Jose dealt with it very well and just made it very clear, this is what's happening, this is your situation. He decided he wasn't happy and he fucked off. Happy days, mature conversation. Take it back to my own day-to-day. I've got lads working for me. We can have an argument at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. By half nine, that argument's over and we're going for a bite of breakfast together. Mature adults, get it over and done with and get it out. Sancho was refusing to apologise, stating it on social media, I will not apologise, and all this other shit. Ten Hag's the boss. He's in the position where he has to show strength. If he shows weakness, game over for him. So it was a messy situation.
Who's around him? Like, what? Why? I mean, this is what I find stunning. Like, the agent who's obviously negotiated his fee will be getting a nice wedge every week on the back of whatever percentage he gets from Sancho. Why is he not saying, like, who's he got around him that's just saying, yeah, you're right, Jaden. Just sit it out. Let's sit this one out for 3 months. Enjoy yourself. If it was you and it was a family member, you'd be saying, get your fucking act together. Get into Carrington. Don't arrange a meeting. Just go and get him. Pull him to one side. You don't have to go for your agent. It doesn't have to be 10 middlemen. It's baffling, but I think maybe because we're not in that world, it's completely foreign and nonsense. But like you say, you've got the lads that work for you and stuff. Like, there'll be things I'm sure you have to bring up with them and discuss with them all the time, but you don't start messaging one of your workers' missus and saying, listen, we have a word with him about you. I don't like the fact he's not turned up on time, or I want to give him a reduction in wage. You go straight to the man, don't you?
Absolutely, yeah. Deal with it head on. Even you're talking about players who might have not have the right people around them. Even go back to Marcus Rashford with that big public statement he put out, that big fucking, I don't know what you call it, an article. So surely someone around him was saying, Marcus, release that after you scored a hat-trick against Liverpool, or release that after you put the ball in the net five times out of the last 10 games. Don't release it when things are going to shit. It just shows, again, have they got the right people around them advising them properly? But
no,
these
not.
Players in the modern world, probably not.
Well, it's even, I think there's probably a lot of people around them that are almost, well, yes men. It's the obvious yes men.
Yeah.
You know, they're probably scared because if they're on the payroll or if they're mates and they get all the perks of being your footballer's mate, and then all of a sudden someone's actually honest with you, you know, they might be off the payroll then, or they might not get the VIP access to the club or whatever it is that makes them want to be his pal. I mean, you'd like to think they're genuinely his pals, but, you know, you'd like to think one of his good pals would say, listen, mate, I'm in touch with the fan base and I've got to be honest with you here. And it's for your benefit in the long term. You might not like hearing it now, but maybe they just don't have these people around them.
Yeah, they're probably living in a bubble that we don't realise what it's like. Where they want to be told they're the best and they want to be given yes men, but that's not something that we're probably likely ever to experience. Jonathan, thank you so much for your time tonight. It's getting very close to midnight and I appreciate you coming on with us. If people want to follow you on social media, how would they do that?
Yeah, just the name, the spelling, Jonathanshargher on the X, as they call it nowadays. I don't, as you know, I don't tweet that often. I do occasionally after games put a few musings, but I find the place a bit, it has its moments, to be fair, some amusing moments. But yeah, when United are doing badly, it can actually further dampen your mood, so I tend to avoid it sometimes. But yeah, I'm on there occasionally, so if you want to drop us a follow, do. And you know, as United fans, all I'd say is try and stay as positive as you can. That's what I try and do. I need to take my own advice as well. And going back to yourself, it's been a pleasure. I don't chat United on these type of forums very often nowadays, but when I do, it's very pleasant, and it's been a pleasure.
Fantastic, and always welcome on Streticast. I'm sure you'll be back not before too long again. If somebody wants to be sadistic enough to follow my nonsense about overcooked steaks and chips on a breakfast, get me at @DayTrippinRed on X or Twitter. If you do not subscribe to this podcast, I will genuinely come and shave your head if you've got hair. And if you don't, well, I'll send you the turkey and give you some back. Get it subscribed, give it a like, give it a review. Folks, it's been a pleasure. And hopefully next week, Dale O'Donnell will take the mantle back over again for me. Episode 198 of the Streticast is now in the library. We'll see you soon.
Podcast Network.